This is the Main Share meeting, and today it's with great pleasure and much gratitude that we welcome Cameron F. from Toronto, who's come to share on the topic of responsible sponsorship versus codependent relationships for up to 40 minutes, after which we will open up for the Q&A portion of the meeting. Cameron, it's over to you.
Well, thank you so much, Sammy. Hi, everybody. My name's Cameron. I'm a member of Cocaine Anonymous. And I am an alcoholic addict who doesn't drink or use. I would love to introduce that way because, you know, that's kind of a paradox. It is a paradox because everything in our step one experience tells us that we'll drink or use or even act out again. And there's nothing secular, human, psychological that's going to stop the train wreck from happening. And I use morning, noon, and night from the age of 20 to the age of 46. And when I wanted to stop, I couldn't stop. And somehow, some way, I kept succumbing to the idea that I could control and enjoy my drinking and using and pursued that notion right up to the gates of insanity or death. And yet, as a member of Cocaine Anonymous, and that's the horror step one is realization, I will drink, I will use again, and to do so is to die. Yet as a member of Cocaine Anonymous, it's been 21 years since I've had a drink or a drug. In fact, if it ever pops up, I can easily control that desire. And it's because I came into these rooms and I met someone who was an ex-problem addict. I knew this person. To see him as an ex-problem addict was pretty astonishing. Kind of like the way Bill met Ebby, fresh-skinned and glowing. It's like, oh my God, what happened to you? And he had a solution, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was armed with the facts about himself. And he won my confidence. And he started me on that amazing journey of the 12 steps of Cocaine Anonymous. Now, I'm what's called a big book sponsor. I use the big book because unlike a lot of recovery texts out there, the big book is written kind of like a very specific set of instructions on how to work this program. It's like following a recipe. And over the years, I have worked with men, women, gays, lesbians, transgenders, black, white, Christian, Muslim. I've worked with all sorts of addiction patterns, alcohol and drugs, sex, love, fantasy, gambling, food, anorexia, bulimia, hoarding, codependency, and the list goes on. All kinds of addiction patterns out there. Many of you know I do a 12 steps, 4 hours workshop last Sunday of every month. And we've taken over 13,000 people through that process of introducing the 12-step program, outlining the program of action. I have worked with 455 people through a 7 to 10 day sponsorship instruction period using the workbook, which is an extrapolation of the actual instructions out of the big book, of which there's about 30. And I currently have 48 people that are dead that I've worked with directly, 37 overdoses, 9 suicides, and 2 were murdered. It kind of reads like a porn star's bio, too. You ever look at the porn stars of the 90s? They all died either of suicide, drug overdose, or they were murdered. My message today is that it only takes a few hours to learn how to work a 12-step program and a lifetime to practice it. And that can be sometimes heresy in the rooms. This share is a summation of my experience over 21 years of working with others. Now, I got a disclaimer. Most addicts are very sensitive people. If you've read 125 of the big book, alcoholics or addicts are sensitive people. It takes a long time to outgrow this serious handicap. And sometimes when I share, some people get really wound up. And my favorite response to anyone who's really upset with something I've said, I just go, whoa, 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 hey, hey, save it for your sponsor, which doesn't seem to help the matter. It just aggravates the hell out of them. Page 50 of our big book, we talk of intolerance. Well, we were intolerant of others. We missed the reality and the beauty of the forest because we were diverted by some of the ugliness of the trees. Over the years, I've been accused of scaring people out of the rooms by the message that I carry because it tends to be blunt. You know, if you can scare someone out of the rooms, I don't know whether they're really ready for the program. I remember a woman used to come to a meeting I used to do at midnight. It was called the Midnight Madness. It was an in-person meeting. And this woman walks in, she sits down at the table, and she goes, "Look what happened to me, Cameron." And she opens up her blouse. And my jaw hits the table, and everybody else's jaw at the table hit the table. And I looked at her, and I said, "What happened to you?" And she had 75 stitches and staples from one ear to the other and right across her chest. She said, "I was at the crack house last week, and a guy wanted the resin out of my pipe. And I told him where to go with it, and he pulled out a butcher knife, and he cut my throat from ear to ear and gutted me like a fish. He's in prison for attempted murder. And Cameron, I want to go back to the crack house tonight." Now, there's nothing I can say that's going to scare that person, right? The obsession to use, you know. Sometimes if people are balking at the program, I just say, "Hey, smoke more crack. Come back when you're ready," right? Sometimes they need to go back out and, you know, burn a few other secular approaches to be beaten into a state of reasonableness or mangled by their addiction to say, "Okay, I surrender. I got a more contrite attitude. I'm ready to do the work." Of all the recovery controversies I get into, I remember Mark Hewson used to talk about climbing the mountain to God. And to get up the mountain, you have to have a mule. Now, there are all kinds of recovery mules. There are meeting maker mules. There are counselor mules. There are 12 and 12 mules. There are big book mules. There's just, you know, go to talk therapy, all kinds of mules that try to get people up to the top of the mountain. Now, at the top of the mountain, we all get up there, what do you do when you get to the top of the mountain? Well, I want to commune with God, but not the big book thumper mule. No, the big book thumper standing by his mule telling everybody coming up the mountain is, "My mule's the best. You know, my mule's the right way to get to the top of the mountain." And they got their heads so far up their asses, they missed the experience with God. We don't worship the fingers that point to the power. I don't worship the big book. I don't worship my sponsor. I don't worship CA. It's God that I cleave to, right? And I see a lot of people, sometimes they're diverted by the fingers that point to the power. And I get it, and of all the controversies, usually with the big book thumpers, "My way's the right way." You know, I got a way I do it. I like it. I teach it a lot, but I have no monopoly on recovery, and 48 are dead. Sometimes, you know, people blame me for killing people. So sometimes I'll introduce myself. "My name's Cameron. I'm the first homicidal serial killing sponsor. It's great to be here." You know, there's a caveat about the big book, too. You take 10 different big book sponsors, all very adept at working the book and teaching the book to other people, and you'll get 10 different answers on a question. Now, that's not a bad thing. No one among us, like I say, has a monopoly on recovery. And but this is the nature. You know, when I'm working with people, I have my way of expressing it. But I tell the newcomer, the Spirit's going to work through you in a way that's unique to you, and you be open to that process. And you will sponsor in a way that makes sense to you. And as much as I'm going to kind of give you my guidelines between responsible sponsorship and codependent relationship, you know, you got to treat every prospect really like a case by case approach. You know, if the only tool in your kit is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And not everyone needs to be treated like a nail. There are some prospects I'll treat like a nail, but, you know, I might take a completely different approach with another prospect. The thing I like to remember is our fellowship has many voices, and it takes a chorus to make a song of recovery. So the theme of this share is responsible sponsorship versus codependent relationships. I want to make a case, first of all, that sponsorship is the key. It's all about being a sponsor. You know, on page 60, it says in the step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry the message. What message are we trying to carry? Well, the big book message to the alcoholic or the addict, and practice these principles in all our affairs. And I like to take my balanced approach to the program is my family comes first. business, job second, so I'm self-supporting so I take care of family. And in my spare time, part-time as an avocation, carry the message to the guy or the gal that suffers. Page 89 suggests that practical experience shows that nothing so much ensures immunity from drinking or using or acting out as intensive work, no half measures, with other addicts. And it works when the other activities fail. What are the other activities that fail? The human, the secular, the psychological. And this is our 12th suggestion. We carry the message to the addict that still suffers. Are you willing to do that? You know, and you can help when no one else can. You know, we are what anthropologists call wounded healers. We've been wounded by our addiction, and it gives us the right through our healing and recovery to teach others on how to heal that condition. But remember, the people we work with are very ill. You know, my qualifying question, which seems so mean, is I always ask the question, are you a loser? Oh, they don't like that. They get all upset. My mother called me a loser. My wife thinks I'm a loser. My counselor says I suffer low self-esteem. Why would you say that to me? And, but if you really understand step one, that I will drink and use again, and when I drink and use again, puts me on a losing streak to the gates of insanity or death, and you look at what you lose, you can pretty much come to a conclusion, yeah, untreated, I'm a loser. You know, over the years of working with others, I've been lied to, I've been verbally abused, I've been physically threatened, I've been sexually harassed, my property's been damaged, my wife and children have been terrorized. These are intense people we work with. So as sponsors, I say to you, keep your wits about you. You know, there's a passage in the book of Matthew, behold, I'm sending you out as sheep amongst the wolves. Be wary like serpents, but gentle like doves, meaning keep your wits about you. You know, don't be inviting untreated crackheads home to meet mom or the wife or the spouse, you know. That can lead to all sorts of troubles. You know, I've worked with all kinds of people, like I said, men and women. I like Zoom because it buffers me. It's safe for me. It's safe for them. If I do work in person, I always work in a public place. Again, it's safe for the prospect. It's safe for me, especially if you're working with the opposite sex, because energies can get kind of crazy in that respect. You know, there's another passage in the book that says this seemed to prove that one addict could affect another addict as no non-addict could. It indicated strenuous work. I love that. There's that no half measures again. One addict with another is vital to permanent recovery. Page 15, I soon found out when all other measures failed, the human, the secular, the psychological, work with another addict would save the day. We know big book sponsorship works. The broker, Bill W., the old timers, they worked hard with many alcoholics, addicts on the theory that only an alcoholic addict could help another alcoholic addict, but they succeeded in only keeping sober themselves. And they realized in order to save themselves, they had to carry the message to another alcoholic addict. You know, I was always playing around with my stats because it says 50% sober up at once, 25 after some relapse. So I thought, well, let's find out if that's true. So I keep a log on everyone I've ever worked with. I have a registration of everyone who's ever took the workshop, and I have a log on everyone out of the 455 that I've taken through a 7 to 10 day process. And I would average, I did pretty good. I was 52, 53, you know, sometimes 60% recovery. And I was talking to a friend, and I said, what kind of recovery rates do you get with your prospects? And she goes, I get 100%. And I went, what? You get 100% success rate? She goes, absolutely. I'm still sober. Right? That's the best kept secret in the fellowship. Now, I would love to have the power to make you well, but I don't. All I can do is show you where the power is and how to tap into it. But it's been 100% effective in my life for 21 years. I love 102. But if you are shaky, you'd better work with another alcoholic or addict. It doesn't say go to a meeting or call your sponsor. It says go work with another addict. We get to keep it by giving it away. We pay it forward. You know, when I get a call from somebody and they're shaky and they're nervous, my spiritual prescription for those who are shaky is this. Take two big books, one newcomer, call me in the morning. That's always a good prescription. So, a case for big book sponsorship. So I'm often asked when I come into the rooms, especially the in-person rooms, and especially in AA sometimes, because they really love their time in AA. And I get asked the question, Cameron, how much time do you got? And I reply, well, why is that important? And of course they go, I understand you don't have a lot of time. I said, no, that's not what I'm saying. I just want to know, why do you think time is so important? Well, it tells me how long you've been sober. Yeah, it does tell me how long I am sober, but it doesn't tell me much else about a person in the fellowship. You know, I've met a lot of people with 10, 15, 20 years sobriety, and I don't know what they got, but I don't want it. And suicide rates in 12 steps today is 80 times higher than normal society, because you got people who are living in sobriety. They're just miserable. You might have met some of them in the rooms. They got no solution, and they're miserable, and they go insane, and they blow their brains out. I've had 9 people commit suicide in sobriety. They could not, would not live this way of life, and they went insane. Now, as I mentioned earlier, you know, of the addicts and alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober and remained that way. And 25 sobered up after some relapses, and the remainder who stayed on, they showed improvement. And it goes on to say, thousands came to the program, but at first they decided they didn't want it. What? Spirituality? Work with others? I don't think so. And what did they do? They went back out. But being the real alcoholic addicts they were, they realized the human secular failed them. They got burned by that. They lost some more, and 2 out of 3 began to return as time passed with a lot more contrite open-mindedness about, maybe I need to go this way. Sponsorship is the key. All the power of our program is in sponsorship. When I went back to university in my 50s, I'm 68 this year, but in my 50s, I decided to go back to university because there's a line in the big book that says, go out and see what other religious people are doing. So I'll go get a degree. Typical addict, right? And I did a degree in medical anthropology and religions. Now, medical anthropology is the study of humans and their healing systems. And I was writing a paper on 12 steps, and I came across this Baltimore, Maryland drug study where they had 500 injection drug users. And and these were cocaine and heroin injection users, and they followed their trajectory in the rooms of AA and NA. And they had 3 groups, with a sponsor, without a sponsor, and those that sponsored others. And at the end of the 1 year, they looked at their sobriety rates. Now, those with a sponsor and those without a sponsor, it was very interesting. Those who were being sponsored, 39% of them were still sober at the end of the first year. And those that were not sponsored had a 44% abstinent rate. Actually, you were better off not being sponsored than you were being sponsored. Now, I think partly that is due to a lot of really poor and ineffective sponsorship that I see out there in the rooms. And that's part to the theme of this share. But what was interesting about this study was that those that sponsored others, 75% of them were still sober. And that 75% efficacy rate seems to be consistent, not only in the year 2000 with the Baltimore, Maryland drug study, but also when Bill was measuring the statistic rates of AA in the 40s, 50% sobered up at once, 25 after some relapse, that 75% baseline of recovery by working the program without any half measures. Helping others is the foundation stone of a recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. Now, what do sponsors always talk about? What do we usually talk about? We're always talking about our newcomers relapsing, right? That's why it's so important that we get them through the steps, get them introduced to the way in which we cleave to this power that lets us easily control our desire to drink, use, or act out. In the first 88 pages of our big book, before we get into chapter working with others, on page 89, it mentions 124 times, work with others, work with another alcoholic, work with another addict. It doesn't say call your sponsor. This is work with a man or a woman, the person in the hole that can't climb out, and show them how to work it. Bill and Bob understood that relationship. I watch your back, you watch my back. It's like co-sponsorship. I don't go, hey, I'm the sponsor, you're the newcomer, shut the fuck up and do what I tell you to do. That's not the way I work. It's like I'm seeking the power right now, just like you're seeking it. So arm in arm, brother and brother, brother and sister, sister and sister, we do this journey where we go look for the power. And we want to both be there when it happens because we both light up at the same time. And that's the experience they talk about that we don't want to miss. You know, being a sponsor is a lot of fun, but you have to understand what's our role as a sponsor. I like to use, we are spiritual pimps. That's all we do. We're spiritual pimps. Dickweed, God, God, dickweed. That's all we do. We just introduce the untreated addict to this divine power. And we let the relationship between them and the divine power do all the work. We don't carry the addict. We carry the message of how do we cleave to a power deep down within ourselves that allows us to easily control that desire to drink, use, or act out. You know, some of the things I hear in the room, this is a selfish program. I got to work on me first. And I never see those people hang around the room's long. It's not a selfish program. Whenever I worked on Cameron, I could never stay sober. But when I cared more about you and wanted to give to you unconditionally in a loving way to help you find that power, my sobriety always got taken care of. Why it works that way, I don't know. Call it karma, the law of harvest. We reap what we sow, but there's a spiritual dynamic that's at play. Lack of power, that's my dilemma. We all have heard that line mentioned ad nauseum in the rooms and in the book over and over again. Lack of power, that's my dilemma. So if that's our dilemma, without power, what's the likelihood I'm going to drink, use, or act out again? 100%. And to do so means I'm going to die. So doesn't it make sense we move the addict through the steps as quickly as they can assimilate it? It's not a complicated program. Right? It was always meant to be embraced quickly. That's why I always say it only takes a few hours to learn it and the rest of your life to practice it. Faith without works is dead. So how do we win the newcomer's confidence? Three things come into play. On page 18 of your big book, it talks about three ways to win the confidence of another addict, but the ex-problem drinker. We're ex-problem drinker. When we come in the rooms and we meet someone who's an ex-problem drinker or an ex-problem addict, that's a very compelling picture because we understand, hey, I'm like you, you're like me. But you're not doing it anymore, and I'm going to do it again unless I find some way out. That's very compelling to someone who wants to stop but can't stop, who's found a solution. Not only am I ex-problematic, but I got a way I can share with you to show you a way out of the hole, our recovery recipe, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we're armed with the facts about ourselves. We know what it means to be an addict. We understand addiction. We understand the boundaries and what it means to be an addict, right? We've been there. We've lived in that hole. The difference is we found a way out, and we can generally win the confidence of an addict in a few short hours. But until this understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. And, you know, what I'm trying to achieve in my share with the newcomer is they realize, hey, I'm like you, you're like me, you don't do it anymore, and I want what you have. We win their confidence, we can take them on that amazing journey. And you either have their confidence or you don't. Now, I think I'm the world's greatest sponsor, but I've failed with thousands. And if I'm working with someone and I've lost their confidence, I don't fire them. I try to find them a sponsor that can win their confidence and pass them along so they're looked after. You know, some days I'll start with them. I have their confidence. By the time we get to through step one, I don't have their confidence anymore. It's crazy working with newcomers. Now, if the prospect doesn't want to stop, don't waste time trying to persuade them. You know, a lot of times I hear people, they start preaching, right? They preach to them. Oh, you got to get this. You got to work this program. You're going to die. And they preach. And, you know, I don't like preachers. I don't think any of us appreciate that kind of an approach. And I think it spoils a later opportunity. If they go, well, I want to go try, you know, my wife's having a baby. I'm going to stay sober for the baby. Hey, I really believe you. I really believe that's what you'll do. And I really wish you well on it. Now, if you find yourself in trouble, here's my number. You know how to reach me. I might be able to help out. Or I could say, oh, your liar's running the show. You know what? You're going to relapse. You're going to smoke crack. Your wife's going to throw you out. You'll never see your baby again. And then you'll come crawling back to me and I'll tell you I told you so. That's spoiling an opportunity. I just let Jenny Crackcorn or John Barleycorn be the arbitrator. You know, if they be one of us and they're trying human secular ways, chances are it's going to fail. I want to be there to say, hey, let me help. Right? And it's a caveat too, when you think about it, because most addicts have to be pretty badly mangled before they really commence to solve their problems. It's a caveat. You know, they go deep down into that hole, but our, you know, the alcohol, the drugs, even the acting out behaviors, they're great persuaders and they beat us into a state of reasonableness. Now on page 94, I'm working with others, there's a line that I love and I use it and I work it a lot. The more hopeless they feel, the better. You know, when they're on the ladder trying to crawl out of the hole, sometimes I'll pull a few rungs out of the ladder and let them hit bottom hard, because the more hopeless they feel, that's better. They're going to be more likely to follow our suggestions. Now, for the alcoholic especially, we favor a detox, right? We favor hospitalization for those that are jittery or befogged. And alcohol is one of the most dangerous drugs out there. It can kill you when you drink it, kill you when you detox from it, right? So hospitalization is important, right, to safely detox them from alcohol. You know, opiates, you'll want to die coming off them, but you won't. But alcohol is a dangerous drug. It's imperative they be detoxed. And so the first question I always ask somebody before I approach them, so that, you know, their minds have to be clear in order to accept what we're going to and understand what we're going to offer them. The first question I ask the newcomer, do you honestly want to stop? I know you need to stop, but do you honestly want to stop? And there's a very delineated boundaries between those two, you know, views. I'm looking for the person, I knew I needed to stop for years, but it was only when I wanted to truly stop that this program took on traction for me. Second question I ask is, how long has it been since your last drink or drug? So I usually like to have a minimum of 3 days sobriety, ideally 5 to 7, if they can do that, right? And then I can introduce them to steps. Now, if you know Bill's story, you know, Bill was still drinking when Ebby came to him and introduced him to, you know, the concept of step 1 and 2. And I think you can sometimes do that if they're still, you know, in and out, you can do 1 and 2, but step 3 requires a clear, detoxed adult decision. Do I want to go a different way? And if they've decided you want what we have, and that's a recovery recipe, and are willing to go to any length to get it, then they're ready to take certain steps. So we ask the newcomer, do you want to quit for good? Not one day at a time, but to quit for good. And what extreme would you be willing to go to? Now, the old timers, when they'd ask this question, the only answer they wanted to hear was, I'm willing to do anything. I am not a fan of that answer because it puts the sponsor in a tremendous position of power. And I don't think that's necessarily a good idea. So when I used to do the workshops, I'd ask the question, what extreme are you willing to go to? What length are you willing to go to get it? And I heard all kinds of responses and answers. And then one fellow said to me, says, Cameron, based on what you're saying in the workshop, by any extreme would mean to thoroughly follow the instructions in the big book. And I thought, what a brilliant answer. And that's all I ask my prospect to do. Will you thoroughly follow the instructions as they're clearly laid out in exact measure with each step? And if they're willing to do that, then their attention should be drawn to us as sponsors. And this is where we get to brag. You know, this is where we get to share what our life is like living this program, cleaving to a power far greater than ourselves and all the great things that have gone with it. And the program has been very kind to me in 21 years. I rebuilt a marriage that I had destroyed. My wife and I are celebrating 35 years of marriage this year. I have a really nice relationship with my 38-year-old daughter and my 40-year-old son. My daughter, I terrorized my kids when they were little as a violent alcoholic addict. And, you know, as a result of these tenets in the program, especially steps 8 and 9, I've developed a really nice relationship with my daughter. My son, he has a 13-year-old, soon to be 14-year-old, autistic, nonverbal, son, and my grandson. And so for me to be sober, for me to be a part of his family and the challenges of that, that's a gift from CA. My son just, I thought I was done with grandchildren. 9 months ago, my son told me his wife was pregnant and she wasn't supposed to get pregnant, which I've heard that story. And on November 11th, Remembrance Day, I got a 9-pound, 12-ounce granddaughter named Vera Lynn. How about that? Vera Lynn. I thought that was so serendipitous that she should be born on Remembrance Day because she was such a big part of World War II and her motivation of the troops. Anyhow, my liver went back to normal after 6 years. I went back to university, graduated top of my class in medical anthropology and religions. I've traveled all over the world speaking to rooms like this. I've been to Sweden, Spain, Denmark, across England, United States, Canada. Man, it is a stellar life living this program. You know, I used to love the effect produced by bourbon and cocaine and marijuana and pills and LSD, but it pales in comparison. I love the effect that the 12-step produces in my life throughout my day. It's the best dope there is. It's the God dope. It's a spiritual ringer every time I connect to it. So, coming to the main theme, instructions for a being responsible sponsors, avoiding codependent relationships. Now, in our big book on page 98, it talks about it's not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how do we give? And that makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, that means we're carrying the addict, not the message. The addict or the alcoholic commences to rely upon us and our human assistance rather than upon God. And believe me, they'll latch onto your ethereal tit and they will suck until you wean them off it, right? So it's a question, how much do you want these people, you know, sucking your ethereal tit? I learned the hard way. My titties are all worn and suckled dry by making lots of mistakes working with sponsors. Now, I like to use colorful metaphors. Now, I believe codependency is the underpinning problem in all the fellowships. That's just my opinion. Codependents are irresponsible in their relationships. They blame others for how they think, feel, and behave. And because you're thinking and feeling and behaving in a way that's unthinkable to me, I just can't handle the way you are. I try and change how you think and how you feel and you behave. Because the codependent's battle cry is this. I need you to change how you think, feel, and behave so I can feel okay about me. And that's an awful way to live life. I lived the first 35 years of my life in that prison. It's an awful way to live life. And I see this attitude manifest a lot in the various styles of sponsorship. So here are some of the ones that I've witnessed. Now, you've got these are codependent sponsors, in my opinion, thinking that if I carry you in such a way that my people-pleasing, my love, my manipulation, my bullying, you know, will somehow change you to make you recover. That's kind of what the mentality is of this type of sponsor. The Care Bear sponsor. I'm going to love you into recovery. I'm going to love you till you love yourself. You know, hell, the love of my own wife couldn't keep me sober. The love of my children couldn't keep me sober. You think some dickweed in the room willing to give me a hug is going to keep me fucking sober? Like, come on. You know, let's give our heads a little shake here. I get it, but that will not keep me sober. I need a power greater than that brotherly filios love in the rooms. But I see that a lot. The recovery bully. I love these ones. You know, it's my job to manage your life because you can't. You know, most sponsors are nuts. Do you really want someone who's insane running your life? Take the cotton out of your ears and shove it in your mouth, you know? Call me every day so I can micromanage your recovery. Hell, you know, like, I love the one, call me every day. I've worked with over 13,000 people. If 13,000 people called me every day to share where they're at, I'd be drinking bourbon right now and I wouldn't be on the channel. Like, oh my God. You're not ready for the steps. Come back and see me when you're 90 days sober. If I could sober up for 90 fucking days, what the hell do I need you for? Right? I love it when sponsors come back when you're X, you know, 5 days detox is one thing, but 90 days, you know, oh my God. I see that a lot. Remember, no major decisions for the first year. You ever hear that one? No major decision. Now think about this. Step one. I admit that I'm powerless over cocaine, mind-altering substances. My life is unmanageable. That's a big decision to make, coming to that conclusion. Took me 46 years to come to that conclusion. It was a major decision. You know, come to believe in a power greater than ourselves restores to sanity. Another major decision. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand it. Another major decision. Made a fearless and moral inventory of myself. Major decision. Every one of our steps is a major decision. I love that. No major decision for the first year of your recovery. See you at the graveyard. Firing the addict for missing an appointment. You know, there's some of the big book sponsors here in Toronto, they were called muckers. And I was taken through the book mucker style. You circle words, you make notes, and the muckers were nuts in a certain respect. You had to do exactly what they tell you to do. We're going to meet at 5 o'clock. And if I showed up 1 minute later, I was fired. The appointment was canceled because I was 1 minute late, you know. This way of micromanaging recovery, I just don't find that really works. No amount of micromanaging would ever make me sober. And so I see that a lot with the recovery bullies. You know, they fire people, you know, they fire addicts for relapsing. That's what I do. That's what makes me an addict. I can't stay sober. I will drink and use again. It makes no sense to me why I would fire someone for being an addict, right? But I see that a lot, you know. And and the last thing is, you know, treatment center. I love treatment center. You go to the treatment center, right? And do you guys have co-ed treatment centers out there? Co-ed, oh my God. You go, there's men and women, they're all barely toilet-trained apes, you know, living on reptilian brains, eating, shitting, fucking, that's all they know how to do. But the rule is at the treatment center is you can't sleep with the clients. And so they find two untreated addicts banging one another on the under the stairwell, and they throw them out. Why? Because they didn't follow the rules. If I could follow the fucking rules, what the hell would I be here in the first place, right? For addicts, right? So, you know, I've never fired anyone. Now, I've been fired thousands of times, but I've never fired an addict. You know, Mark Houston used to say, when you don't care, I can't. And when you do care, I must. And I pretty much guide my working relationship with the untreated addict in that manner. Now, you can get codependent sponsees too. As I said, they'll latch on to you. You know, I don't make any decisions until I talk to my sponsor. My sponsor makes all my decisions for me. They tell me who I can sleep with, how to manage my money. They're my lawyer. They're my counselor. They're my doctor. And I know sponsors that pull that kind of game, and the sponsee makes them the power. I need someone who can hold me accountable. Call me on my shit. That's not what I do. I'm not here to, you know, I might mention it if I see a blind spot, but I'm not here to babysit you or micromanage you or tell you how you're going to live your life. That's not my job. Not my job to hold you accountable. My job is to show you a process whereby you can cleave, you can draw close to that divine reality deep down within ourselves and connect to a power far greater than you, the cocaine, the alcohol, the marijuana, or whatever it is that's ailing you, and easily control your desire. That's all I'm here to do. Now, the person who makes the approach, what makes our approach so unique is we've had the same difficulty. Like I say, we're like wounded healers. Now, we make the approach, right? That's very key in the rooms. And I always say, take care of your brothers and sisters. You see someone pick up a chip, approach them. Hey, have you been here before? Do you have a sponsor? You know, et cetera. You know, see if they want to be plugged in. I remember I worked with a woman in Houston, Texas. She was a crystal meth addict. She'd go to AA and she'd call me up crying, saying, you know, the men are touching me in a wrong way. They're hitting on me. And I'm going, where are your sisters looking out for you? That they obviously know what they're talking about. Their whole department shouts at the prospect that they have a real answer. They walk their talk. I know a lot of people who talk the walk, but they don't necessarily walk the talk. Are they walking their talk physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually? Not sobriety, right? They have no attitude of holier than thou. We're not saints, preachers, crusaders, or mission makers. And I meet a lot of saints and virgins in the rooms. And I'm no saint. Those of you who know me know that. I'm not here to preach, and I don't think any addict really appreciates a sermon or a self-righteous 12-step member. Nothing whatever except a sincere desire to be helpful. As I said, Mark Houston, you say, when you don't care, I can't. And when you do care, I must. And there are no fees for the big book. You know what's big today? Recovery coaching. Big money in recovery coaching, especially if you're working the celebrity sets, the multi-billion dollar treatment center industry. And Bill was very smart in understanding you can't mix the spiritual with the material. And there's no axes to grind, no windy arguments or frothy debates. So when I'm working an understanding with my prospect, I go, are you willing to show up and do the work? How do I know they're willing? They show up. How do I know you're willing? You're here right now. Will you answer questions with a simple yes or no? And lastly, can you be open-minded? Judge for yourself the results of this approach. But not to be so open that your brains fall out. And I see a lot of sponsors wanting the brains of their addicts to fall out. You do whatever I tell you to do. Don't question me. I don't encourage that approach. And lastly, no people to please. No ass kissing. No groveling. We're no lectures to be endured. We're not here to run your life. There's no contracts to be signed. There's no rules for you to follow. You're perfectly free to try it your way if you want. But if you want what I have and are willing to do what I've done, you just might have a shot at it, 75% shot at it. And these are the conditions we found most effective. After such an approach, many of us take up our beds and walk again. So vision for you. Thus we grow. And the business of addiction is booming, folks. We could sure use your help on the firing lines of recovery. Remember, it only takes a few hours to learn it and then the rest of your life to practice it. Abby Thatcher was 60 days sober when he carried the message to Bill W. Dr. Bob was 2 weeks sober when he carried the message to Bill D, AA number 3. And Bill W was 7 days sober when he frantically went looking for other alcoholics and addicts to work with. And they all worked it, because lack of power was the dilemma. So when you reach out to the newcomer, remember, you're not going to fuck them up any more than they're already fucked up. So throw them a frickin' bone. Show them how to work it. You just might save a soul. Because remember, you got your script. You got your big book. That's your narrative. You have your experience, and the newcomer has theirs. And with a willingness, an attitude of willingness and honesty and open-mindedness, you can bring these three elements together and watch a miracle occur. So in conclusion here, folks, I know I'm a little over my time. You know, our 12th step comes from the book of James, and these are the promises of step 12. It says in the book of James, chapter 5, 19 and 20, when my brothers and sisters, if any one of you should lose your way to the truth being God or the divine, and another, like a sponsor, and we lose our way to the truth as addicts, and another person shows you a way back to that truth, like what a sponsor does, that person not only saves the soul, but covers a multitude of sin. And I got a lot of sin to atone for. Thus, life will take on new meaning to watch newcomers recover, to see newcomers help newcomers to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship of big book sponsors grow up about you, to have a host of big book sponsor friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and each other's is the bright spot of our lives. And I just want you to listen to these words as we wrap up here. Let me just make sure I can share this sound. Because I'm for that. Have a bright spot in our lives. This is an experience you don't want to miss. I'm for that. How about you? And this is my final closing words. As a sponsor,
you've got a friend in me. You've got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your past did. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me.
God bless. See you on the firing lines of recovery, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, so first up, we have Isaac, if you'd like to come in, please.
Hi, thanks, Sammy, for taking the meeting. Hi, everyone. I'm Isaac. I'm an addict. Cameron, thank you so much for your share. It was really good to hear you today. Just got so much out of it. My question is, at the beginning of your share, you talked a little bit about the different approaches of taking people through the steps on a case-by-case basis. I'm just wondering if you could expand on some of the ways you guide people through the work.
Well, some of the examples, like sometimes I can work with someone and work them through the steps fairly quickly in 7 to 10 days. There are some people that may not be quite firing on all cylinders and they're struggling a little more. It may take a couple of weeks or a little bit longer. So I can adjust accordingly. Some people, I need to be really blunt. I was speaking with someone today and I would play a soundbite for them throughout the share because they just kept talking and talking and talking. So I would just, you know, as they're sharing, I would just, you know, basically say, shut up. In fact, that's one of my favorite slogans, shut the fuck up. But other people I'm really gentle with, you know, I can be very supportive. I can be very, you know, sensitive. So it really depends on each prospect, but I vary my style accordingly. And I do try to draw on God's intuition to guide me. Before I work with someone, I do a prayer meditation. God, you know, help me to find the right words, the right stories, the metaphors, whatever, so that I can guide this person back to your infinite power and wisdom. And I open myself up to that intuition. So I take that kind of an approach. Thanks, Isaac.
Brilliant, thank you. And Paul, would you like to come in for a question? Oh, you're still on mute, Paul. Let me just click that off. There you go.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm Paul, an alcoholic. Thank you very much for the meeting. I'd just like to ask a two-part question, please. What advice can you give if a sponsor relapses? And what would you advise the best way to bring them back into the rooms?
If the sponsor relapses? You know, that's a really good question, Paul, because...
Sorry, I beg your pardon, sponsee.
Oh, when the sponsee relapses. Okay. Yeah, sure. The guy who took me through the steps actually slipped off halfway through it, and I was desperate to find someone to pick up and couldn't. And then a few days later, he called me up a lot more sober, and we continued the work. And he actually sobered up permanently from that point forward and is now decades sober. When a prospect goes out, and I've worked with lots who go out, the first thing I do when they get back is I go back to, do you really want to stop? When was the last time you used? So that there's a period of detox. And then I review step one with them. Where are you not clear that you can't safely use anything mind-altering? And we'll review the powerlessness and the hopelessness and the unmanageability of the addiction. Then I'll reconfront. It depends on where I'm at with them, too, in the process. If, you know, we're in steps 8 and 9 and they're relapsing, there's something definitely out of whack. Between steps 1 and 3, I can understand it. So I'll just reconfirm the premises that we've agreed to bring them to whatever junction they were at before they relapse. And then just continue working through, working steps, drawing closer to that power. And as long as they're willing to show up and do the work and say, I care, then I certainly will show up and work with them. And when they don't care, they don't usually call, and I don't hear from them for a while, and sometimes never again. So that's how I handle it.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you. Okay, and next we have Danielle, if you'd like to come and ask your question, please.
Aloha, Cameron. Thank you so much for your share. I just wanted to piggyback off the first question. So basically, like, I was told that I just pass on the steps the way that I do them in my daily practice and the way I was taught. So to alter someone's program in any other way than besides the way that I'm comfortable doing them? I mean, would you suggest that, or just, you know, if they don't want to do it the way that I do it, refer them to somebody else?
Okay, there's a lot of different responses to that question. So I'll share a quick story. A guy I knew, he was a mucker, big book thumper. And as he was being led through the book, circling words and making notes with his sponsor, and they're reading the book together, there was a certain a page they were on where he had this profound spiritual experience for whatever reason. And he had accidentally spilt coffee on that page. So when he's taking his prospects through the steps, when they got to that page in the big book, he'd have them sprinkle coffee on the page. And I said, you're out of your fucking mind. You know, you get that kind of crate that I get why you're trying to duplicate a process that brought you to recovery. But, you know, again, you know, be open-minded, but not so open your brains fall out. The fellow that took me through the steps, I really wanted to stop. I was 8 months sober, dry, sobriety. I was insane. And I was going back out to drink. I couldn't take it anymore, jerking off in the rooms about my bad day. And so he took me aside and showed me how to work it. And it took about 90 days to go through it, which was all right. But I found when I started working with others and taking that same approach, people were relapsing by the time we got the Bill story. If we even got there. And then I ran into Wally Patton out of Arizona, wrote the book Back to Basics. Says, Cameron, let me show you how you can take someone through the steps in a few short hours and give them a lick of the ice cream cone so they have a fighting chance. And that opened me up to a different approach. So I used some of the things that my original sponsor had shown me, but I adapted and I started teaching Wally's approach. But I found there were some challenges there too with the 4 1-hour thing. So I combined it all into 4 hours. And I've looked at, you know, Chris Raymer's approach with the primary purpose groups out of Texas. I've looked at Billy Snowden's approach with the back, big book step studies on the East Coast of America. I've looked at the Richmond group's approach. You know, they all have elements that work and, you know, but I think the bottom line is if you're working the steps and finding the power, that's what I'm doing. And I'm always open. You show me another way to tap that power and effectively duplicate that and show other people to do it. By all means, I'm open for it. Let's figure it out. But I found that my approach has changed vastly from when I originally did it 21 years ago to the way I do it now. And even in the context of the workshop and the workbook I use, my approach to teaching that has changed dramatically. Even though I'm using the same workbook and the same workshop, my approach has shifted. Because you'll get better. You get more insightful as you grow in effectiveness and understanding with this divine power. Of course, your thoughts and your views are going to shift somewhat. So I'm not a big fan of doing it exactly. I get it, trying to duplicate the process. And we should continue to duplicate that which really is effective. But, you know, sometimes a better mousetrap comes along. I hope that answers that.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Okay, so next we have Bruno. We have gone over time slightly, so if you wouldn't mind coming in just asking your last couple of questions quickly. Thanks, Bruno.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
My name is Bruno, and I'm an addict from South Germany. And first of all, I want to thank you all for service. And I want to thank Cameron for this. That's just awesome to listen, to share like that. Now I have two questions. First question is, I had, like the coffee spiller, I was fortunate that I had during the process of working the steps after 20 years of active addiction, I had such an like indescribable experience, and I finished working the steps, and I don't know how it's in Canada, but we don't have so many CA meetings in Germany, and from these meetings we don't have so many people who really work the steps. And my sponsor always tells me, Bruno, you have to get a sponsee in order to sponsor. But like, even though I visit a lot of meetings, people usually don't ask for like ask me to sponsor them. So my question would be, if you're not like directly approached, what's a good way to work with people?
Okay, that's a good question. I troll the rooms. I'm a troller. I love trolling. I bait the rooms. I talk about how powerless I am, how all the secular human approaches that failed me, everything that I lost. And then that's what I was like. And then what my life is like today. And people, and that I'm baiting. I'm deliberately baiting the room. When I say it only takes a few hours to learn how to work it and the rest of your life to practice, I'm baiting the addict. Cause as addicts, we all want our buzz now. That's why I smash cocaine, why I drink bourbon. I want my buzz now. So I'm baiting the rooms. I got an approach where you can find the power right now if you're willing to do the work. And I'm deliberately looking for the person who goes, I want what you got. Show me how to work it. So step one, I fish heavy on step one. That's the bait to use to display yourself as an ex-problematic with a solution armed with the facts. That's the best way to attract a newcomer. And you got online meetings. You got meetings all over the world, Bruno. Tap in. There's no shortage of dickweeds to work with. Come to the workshop at the end of the month. I'll stick a newcomer in front of you. All right?
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And Ross, would you like to come in very quickly? Thank you.
Thanks. I'm Ross, I'm a recovered addict. Thank you everyone for the meeting. I'll keep it quick. Hi, Cameron. Brilliant share. I had a few questions for you, just quick ones. So what guidance or disciplines do you ask newcomers to do on a daily basis before starting into the steps? And what does your morning look like now, so far along the process?
Well, I start them right off with prayer and meditation. I get them meditating. The very first session, I open up with a meditation. And I get them, and I introduce them to all kinds of different ways to meditate and center their being so they're in that position of neutrality, safe and protected. And then we start working the steps. Like I said, I do it in 7 to 10 days, so you know, at the end of the 7 to 10 day period, I've got this amazing relationship with a person I didn't even know a week ago. And it's pretty dynamic and fast moving. But then I cut them loose and get them working with others as quickly as possible. If I have a prospect in the wings, I may even pass that along to them. And I leave my, if you don't want to talk to me about victories or challenges or whatever, my phone's always there for you. But that's what I do. It happens so fast. I really don't have things going on a day-by-day basis with them. Just teach them how to center, teach them how to work the step, teach them how to share it with others, and cut them loose.